Okay, hope you can hear me okay. Hello everyone, I'm Enrique Sagese, a senior program manager with Information Protection Group at Microsoft, the group that makes AD RMS, Azure RMS, and the whole family of RMS related products. And today we're going to be talking about a little bit of what happened over the last few years with RMS and what scenarios we are enabling, and also a little bit about the future of RMS. The problem RMS tries to solve is, on one hand, I don't know what clicked there, on one hand, that of maintaining information security, keeping essential information confidential. At the same time, we are trying to make information more secure, which enables people to collaborate more. I have a problem here with the automatic timing. I'll try to hold it. Let me see if I can stop that. Where is pause here? If we try to make information too secure, if there is such a thing, people don't collaborate. Same thing is we make information to float freely. If people know that information is at a risk, continuous risk of leakage, they just avoid collaborating with others. Let's say you have a partner. You trust them, but, well, they're a different company, and you're afraid that they might leak information. You may end up not sharing information that they need to do their work, which is not to your advantage. You're losing opportunities for collaboration. So by making information secure, but at the same time accessible and usable, we encourage collaboration, we encourage sharing, and you end up sharing things that you wouldn't have shared otherwise in a secure manner. The challenge is that the world we see today, the IT environment, is much more complex than the environments of the past. We have users that maybe your internal users, maybe external users, people from another company that you may trust, you may have contracts with, but they are just not you. They may have different level of training, different cultures, different contracts, maybe with other companies at the same time. So managing user access to content is essential, and managing how these users use the information is essential. We also have devices. It used to be just PCs. Now it's PCs, tablets, phones, web-based applications, lots of things that are much more difficult to manage than the traditional PC. PCs are always traditionally always connected, always within your offices. Not really a huge challenge, but at the same time, phones, tablets, web applications, they have different behaviors. They're not always yours. They may be the user's device, and they're much more difficult to manage. So controlling information based on the location where they are is nearly impossible. Then, again, my apologies. Then we have applications. Applications that may be of different types, may be running on different devices, and managing these applications is also part of the process of managing the information, since it's the applications that enable access to the information. And finally, we have data with which is actually what you should be trying to protect. As an IT pro, I couldn't care less if somebody loses a device for the device itself. It's $300 or something like that, it's probably insured. But the data that's in the device is what I care about. It's what I'm really focused on. And we need to achieve the ability to manage, keep having trouble with these slides, to manage the devices, the people, the applications, and the data, controlling access to all that and keeping everything protected. As I said before, the key here is to protect your data while encouraging collaboration. Again, the traditional solutions for information protection relied on blocking collaboration. Let's take a DLP solution, for example. Traditionally, you see something suspicious floating out there, and you say, oh, let's block this. Let's stop it. And some people may be prevented from doing their job. On the other hand, as I said before, if you don't control data, responsible employees might say, I'm not sharing this because I don't know where it's going to end, which also harms productivity. This is complicated by the fact that companies no longer work alone. Companies interact with other companies. They always did, but now there's not a boundary of what a company is. Is the company that's building an Xbox, is that Microsoft or not? Is the company that builds the chips that go into an iPhone, is that Apple or not? It's very difficult to define the real boundary, even legally. So controlling the flow of data is very difficult when you cannot even really define a real boundary of what's your organization. My team interacts with about 100 different large customers today, every year, directly on a continuous fashion. We also interact with thousands on one-to-one interactions, and we learn a lot from them. We learn, obviously, that data privacy and data security is essential. You cannot run a business without keeping some files or some information confidential. Second one is that the perimeter is fading. In the past, you used to have buildings, firewalls, walls, and you could say, this is my building. What is essential or critical stays inside. What is non-essential floats everywhere. That's gone. Today, it's almost impossible to define what's your company, and more so based on physical location, saying this building is secure, the rest is not. People flow in and out. You have partners. You have people working from home. So you cannot work that way. We've seen many models for data protection to evolve over the years. Many of them were completely reactive. One example is DLP, which we compare to having a cage full of wild animals, opening the door, letting them run out, and then trying to chase them with a net, which is obviously extremely hard and impossible to get 100% right. There's always one critter that's going to get hidden somewhere, and you'll never see it again. We try to encourage a model where the animals have a leash, so if they run out, you can control how far they get. And if needed, you can get them to the box much easier. Obviously, it's easier said than done, but that's basically the model we try to encourage. Thank you. Another problem is that organizations have systems that must work with the data. It's not just the user accessing data on a client application. If you have a sensitive document or a sensitive email, applications must be able to deal with the data on their own. Maybe a user is trying to access his data on a web page. Maybe the server through which this file is traversing has to scan it, index it, control it based on content, do things based on the data itself. Traditional information protection applications do maybe too much of a good job of protecting the data because they protect it even from the system that needs to operate on data. They make it completely opaque. As an example, content encryption gateways, which are very popular today. We see one or two popping up every week. And this encrypt information as it goes outside of your offices, basically. When this data is to be processed by a cloud-based application, in most cases, that's garbled data. It's inaccessible to the system. So the systems cannot search for data on these documents. They cannot show them on screen. It's extremely restrictive. And this solution tried to solve the problem on a one-by-one basis by adapting behaviors to different applications, and that really is not practical. In the end, it turns the cloud into expensive storage. The other thing that we see is that companies have been waiting for the perfect solution. They look at a solution for information protection and they say, but it doesn't solve this problem, so I'm not going to do that. Look at another one, well, it doesn't solve this other problem. I'm not going to do that. And the problem is that data is leaking now. the perfect solution may never come. We're always going to have to accept some level of risk. What we're trying to do is to minimize that risk to a very reasonable level. If you compare, if you look at the newspapers or anywhere where data leakage incidents are reported, 100% of them historically, and probably more than 99% in the future, are always about data that was not protected. It was unencrypted in a hard drive, it was in a backup that was not encrypted, users had complete access to that data and they didn't have any kind of control over it. So in the end, having something that allows you to protect and control the flow of data is much better than waiting forever for the perfect solution. Not a single one of these incidents was about protected data that wasn't protected enough. May happen in the future, but we haven't seen it yet. Finally, the last learning that we got is that peer-to-peer federation, in order to exchange content with companies, is not scalable. It's not a practical solution. I always mention that Microsoft has 7,000 partners, close to 1 million companies with which we interact on a daily basis, and we have 7 formal trusts. 7 companies with which we can securely exchange data based on a formal trust. We have other mechanisms, as I'm going to talk later to address that, but when we didn't, we only could collaborate securely with 7 companies out of 1 million. That obviously is a tiny fraction of what we have to do. In the end, users don't even know which one those 7 companies are, so they will not assume that they can collaborate securely with anybody, and they will simply not collaborate or collaborate insecurely. There has to be a better way to exchange information securely with other companies without having to tell, let's play together, let's exchange documents securely by doing all these ceremonies or whatever is necessary. Houston, we have a problem. Okay. Give me 1 second because I lost my mouse. Not my day today. And this will help. Keep losing my mouth, my mouse. Okay, this should go more fluidly from now. So, what do we do? When we set out many years ago to do information protection based on RMS, we basically made a few promises. Only recently, these have become true. They were conceptually valid, always. But technically, the market kept changing and kept invalidating these assumptions. Only in the last year, we actually implemented things in a way that make it effective and make these promises effectively true. First one is that we can protect any file type. We need to be able to protect Office files, obviously. Also PDF, between Office files and PDF, we have about 80% of the files out there. But then text, images, and many other file formats, actually any file format. You cannot expect users to analyze the type of or file extension for a file before deciding if it's something that they want to protect or not. Or you don't really want to have them using different tools for different types of files. We need to protect in place, but also protect data as it travels. When you do disk-based encryption, you are assuming the data is going to stay there. When you put access control list on a file on a folder, you're assuming that people open the file, close it, never move it elsewhere, and never do anything risky with the files. We need to protect the data wherever it's created, preferably at the point of creation, and then keep it protected as it flows to different locations. You need to be able to collaborate with anyone. That doesn't mean that you're going to send confidential information to everyone, but it means that if you need to collaborate with somebody, there shouldn't be any restrictions telling you that you can only collaborate with these people insecurely. That is for 2 reasons. First one is that, obviously, you have to be able to collaborate securely with whoever you need to collaborate securely. But the other reason, probably more important, is that even if you define a sub-segment of the market with which you can collaborate securely and you tell everybody do not collaborate with the others, which they will, there's the problem that users cannot really know a long list of companies by memory of the companies with which they can collaborate securely, so it will just not use the technology for anybody. We've seen that with RMS. Even companies that deployed 20, 30 trusts with other companies to exchange data securely never got adoption internally because the end users got tired of sending confidential information to somebody else outside of that list without knowing, getting it rejected, having to unprotect the data, save it again, and share it insecurely. In the end, they got trained to never protect data. So you need to be able to share with anybody securely. Let me clarify that. You need to have boundaries. You need to be able to say, this data doesn't go to those guys or goes only to these guys. But that's based on policy. You establish a policy on the document and say, this document goes to these areas or can be accessed by these companies and by no one else. There doesn't need to be and there shouldn't be another boundary that is not the policy. There shouldn't be a physical or arbitrary or technologically imposed boundary. It's just the policy in the documents that regulates who can access it and nothing else. You need to have rich access to the data from all your important applications and services. Some companies adopt a technology that only works with PDF, and they say, well, if you need to protect this, turn it into a PDF, and then it will be protected. That's not only annoying for users and restrictive, but it also generates the problem that there are applications in the middle that need to work with this data, a web renderer, a scanner, an indexer, something like that. You need to have all the necessary applications enlightened, that's the word we use, to work with the protected data. Client applications and server applications. Additionally, you need server applications that generate data, SAP, another CRM, things like that, to be enlightened so they generate protected data, so the data is protected from the source. You need to adapt not only to your present but also to your future. You have an on-premises organization today. You don't have any immediate plans to work with the cloud. 5 years from now, you decide to start moving some services from the cloud, but you have documents that still need to be accessed, plans, specifications, long-term product details, things like that. And those still need to be accessed by everybody in the organization through any system, including the newly adopted cloud services. So you need a type of protection that is topology independent, that can work on premises, can work in the cloud, can work hybrid. You need to be adaptable. And because your information protection needs to be future-proof. It's not like a database application. You have a database, you have a new requirement, this database doesn't meet it, you change it. That's conceptually easy. If you have an information protection platform that protects files that are going to be in millions of locations throughout your organization, there is no chance to re-encrypt everything. We've seen people try saying, oh, we are using this technology, we need to start using this technology, we're going to re-encrypt everything. And there's always a pen drive somewhere in a drawer that contains files that were protected with the old one, and you don't want to lose them. So in the end, when you do that kind of migration, you have a very long-term coexistence period, or you have to accept data loss in the sense that some data is going to be lost. So when you choose an information protection platform, it needs to be something that adapts to different topologies, different architectures, and that offers the best guarantees that it's going to be able to work regardless of changes in your IT infrastructure. Finally, you need to have a technology that can enable third parties to reason over data, to work on data without user interaction. Here's the challenge. When most cloud services or even on-premises services run on data, they don't run on the context of the user. One example is Exchange. Microsoft Exchange is very well known, very successful, but an Exchange instance ran as a server account or service account. It doesn't run as the user. So if you restrict access to a user to the data, the service cannot process that data. The technology needs to offer delegated access to the data. It needs to be able to say, service account X can work on behalf of the user on the data, so it can render it on screen, can decrypt it for journaling, or whatever it needs to be done. Those are things that RMS does. Those are the things that make us think that we're on the right path. Implementation-wise, RMS fell short in the past from many of these in practical sense. For example, we could conceptually protect any file type, while we'd never built the tools to do so. We could collaborate with anyone as long as you establish point-to-point trusts. You didn't have a generic way of collaborating with everyone, and so on and so forth. But we worked hard over the last couple of years to close all these gaps. And while still there are some minor gaps that I'm going to mention later, well, not so minor in some cases, but we are in the process of completing those gaps and closing those gaps over the next few months. And today, we can safely say that it's a very complete and usable platform. Let's talk about that. So, how does it work? We have two flavors of RMS. We have on-premises RMS and cloud-based RMS. Today, they are actually quite different. They're based on a different core engine. They have some differences in capabilities. They integrate differently with other systems. The good thing is that they offer the same APIs and same interfaces to applications, so they are compatible, but they are in general, but they are quite different. We're in the process of converging them. We expect them to converge completely by the end of the year. So by the end of the year, you should have two flavors of the same platform. And we plan to do that with a minimal disruption. So rights management on-premises, today called ADRMS or Active Directory Rights Management, is a part of Windows, and it interacts with Active Directory as its identity source. There is no security without identity. You cannot say my data is secure if you cannot define who can access to it and who can't. So we use Active Directory for that. We can federate with other directories, but everything in the end roots to Active Directory. We offer different endpoints for different types of applications. Client, rich client applications such as Office or Foxit or something like that, or CAD applications. We have a different set of endpoints for mobile devices. That is because mobile devices have different capabilities. For example, they don't talk NTLM, they don't talk Kerberos, they don't have certificate storage. They lack many things that a rich client application can do. So we create a different set of endpoints for this platform. Let me do one clarification. That upper arrow officially doesn't exist today, but we released a couple weeks in preview, in a public preview. The mobile endpoints is called the mobile device extension for ADRMS, and it's going to be publicly launched in a couple months if you're interested in testing that. You're already using ADRMS and you want to test the mobile endpoints, let me know, and I can put you into that technology adoption program. We also offer integration with solutions such as SharePoint, Exchange, or FCI. And that integration is optional from the point of view that you don't need that in order to be able to encrypt a document, consume a document, but those integrations are what makes RMS fluid, usable. Let's say that you only integrate with Office or something like that, and you don't integrate with Exchange. That means that every time you send an email, it is completely opaque to Exchange. Exchange can process the email, send it, deliver it to the final user, but if the end user tries to access it in OWA, they cannot see it. If the server needs to scan for malware or things like that, it cannot do it. So those integration endpoints are what make data that is protected with RMS a first-class citizen of the IT ecosystem. It can actually act as regular data, and it doesn't degrade the user experience. On the other side, we have the cloud service, Microsoft Azure. Azure Rights Management, as it's called today, relies on Azure Active Directory, as it's obvious. Azure Active Directory can be synchronized or federated with Active Directory, so it doesn't mean that you need a separate directory. You just have a different instance of the directory that can be synchronized with your primary directory, and you can get single sign-on and all that. But primarily, it interacts directly with Azure Active Directory. And it has the same endpoints that the on-premises server does. It also integrates not only with the on-premises servers, but with the cloud, with Office 365. On-premises RMS, ADRMS, can interact with some components of the cloud. For example, you can export your keys and pass them over to Exchange Online, so Exchange Online can work with information that is protected with RMS. But that is kind of cheating because you're exporting your keys and passing them over to a different service. With Azure RMS, those services are actually interacting with Azure RMS more directly, in some cases completely directly, like SharePoint Online directly calls all service. In the case of Exchange Online, they first interact with us to acquire the keys and then process on their own, but they do that transparently. So we can see that Azure RMS is kind of a more general solution today because it can work with on-premises servers and with cloud servers. It can work with on-premises client, mobile devices, and everything, while the on-premises platform is a little bit more limited to on-premises scenarios. Some companies are concerned about using a cloud service for information protection because they say, well, given all the recent information about the NSA snooping and all that, I'm not sure I want to keep my encryption keys, which is what keeps me safe, in the hands of somebody else. And we fully understand that. Actually, before all this NSA thing came up, we thought that some concerns like that might come, might block cloud adoption. So we implemented a thing that is called key management service as part of the Azure platform. And key management service basically abstracts key management from the rest of the platform. And then we enhance these with support for hardware security module and keys that are owned and managed by our customers. I'm going to explain later how that works. But basically, it means that Microsoft doesn't have access to the keys that are used to protect your data. It has physical collocation of those keys, but we cannot hand them over to somebody else. We cannot give somebody else access to these keys. We cannot even see the keys ourselves. Very quickly, how RMS works, to put some of the other stuff in context. Let's say I have a secret document that has some confidential information. When I protect it with RMS, whether that's by a rich client application or a server application, a DLP solution, or something like that, what I do is to take the body of the document, encrypt it with a symmetric key, normally AES-128. We take that key, that symmetric key, and encrypt it with the public key of the service, the RMS public key, and we create a policy that says who can do what. We also encrypt that with that public key. And we stamp the encrypted policy, the encrypted content key, and the encrypted content together. That is a new document. That is the secret colla formula dot docx. That thing becomes a new document, which means that if the document floats around, if I put it in a pen drive, if I post it on Facebook, whatever I do with the document, the whole document, encrypted and with every information that is needed to acquire a license to consume it, is in there. When I need to unprotect the document, I need to do something. I'm going to explain what it is. But in the end, I'm going to enable my application to decrypt the body of the document, get rid of the policy, but respect whatever the policy said that I could do and what I couldn't do. Obviously, in order to unprotect the document, I need to have rights to unprotect the document, which need to be expressed in that policy in the document. Let's go a little bit more in detail. When I want to consume the document, I need to have an application that needs to be able to deal with protected documents. That's the biggest restriction that we have in the past. We only RMS-enabled Office, even some applications in Office, and that prevented people from using RMS for PDFs, CAD drawings, things like that. I'm going to explain how we solve that problem later, but let's assume that the applications are enlightened for now. These applications can call an RMS SDK, which is going to talk to our services. It's going to call our service and say, well, I have this document, I have this policy in the document, and I need this user, which is already authenticated against the service, to be able to access this document. So it passes the policy in the document to the server. The server analyzes the policy, which is encrypted, so it's only the server that can decrypt it and modify it and check the content, send the content of the policy. If appropriate, if the user has rights, passes back a list of rights that tell the user or tell the calling application what things the user can do with this document. Two important things. First, the server, whether it's Azure RMS or ADRMS, never sees the document itself. Microsoft never sees your document. You never pass it to us, not even encrypted. You just extract the policy and send it to the service or server. The service or server makes a decision and passes back the encryption key. The content stays in the client. So that means that even if we had access to your keys, even if we could decrypt everything you have, we don't have the documents. So there's nothing for us to decrypt. At least that is the case if you're not storing your documents in our cloud. Let me clarify that a little bit more. If you are using Office 365 for storage, and you're using RMS to protect those data, and you're using RMS in the cloud to protect that data, in theory, we can decrypt your documents. In practice, there are many, many, many controls that prevent us from doing so. First, we are different organizations. We have different data centers, or we are even co-located data centers, but managed by different organizations, different people, different trainings. There are logical and ethical walls that prevent us from doing that kind of thing. In addition to that, we have logging of every tamper-proof, sequential timestamp logging of every single operation that is exposed to you. If you see a gap there that raises suspicions, you can block us from accessing your data. There are many controls there. But the easiest way to say that you cannot, we cannot access your data is if we don't have it. So if you have a document that you have on premises, you can use Azure RMS, and we still cannot access your documents because we don't have them. A little bit more about how RMS works conceptually. You have documents of different types. They tend to float around, as I mentioned before. It's very difficult to contain where documents reside because users access these documents from different devices. They store them in different places. They synchronize. Today, it's very common that one storage location is automatically synchronized with a cloud service, and then that's synchronized with another device, maybe a home machine. If I put something on my hard drive, there is a chance that it will end up in OneDrive. If from OneDrive, it might end up in my phone, and it's also synchronized with my wife's phone. So keeping data in a single location is almost impossible. We want to define a perimeter, and this perimeter is based on policy, not on physical locations. And the policy enforces things such as encryption. Encryption means that the bad guys, the unauthorized guys, cannot get to the content. Access controls, which say who can decrypt the content and who can't. And finally, enforcement that says the people that can access this data, that pass the access controls and can decrypt the data, what can they do with it? Can they just decrypt it? Can they just forward it to somebody else? Can they print it? Can they copy data and paste it somewhere else? These three things, access controls, encryption, and enforcement, are what defines the policy, and those are the essential pillars of RMS. Those are what make RMS functional. This keeps your documents basically contained within that perimeter. From the user experience, it varies depending on how you protect data. But in essence, let's say that you have a document, and you, as a user, want to protect it. There are different ways to get this done. It can be automatically protected. It can be protected in transit as it goes through a server or is posted on a file share or something like that. But let's say the user wants to take action and protect the document, and they're using Office, so they go to File, Protect, choose an option within the policies. You may define company templates that define what different levels of access are, and then the user chooses one of these options. The document, before it gets encrypted, the application needs to call the server or service, perform a set of operations, authenticating the user, obtaining a bunch of artifacts, certificates, and things like that. That is all transparent for the user. The user never sees any of that. The user sees a delay of maybe 1 second the first time, and then the document gets encrypted. Obviously, on screen, it's not encrypted. The user will still see the document as it is. The only change that we'll see is a banner that says, this document is protected with this policy. You should not be doing this, this, and that. And that's all the user sees. The person that protected the document is the author. So as the author, I can do whatever I want with it. But that reflects what other users will be able to do with this document. I don't need to create a new file. It doesn't change the file extension in the typical case. It's just the original file that is now protected. I save it to a pen drive. I share it with somebody else. The encryption and the policy travel with the document. When somebody else tries to open this document, they will go through a similar flow. They contact the server that was used to protect this document. They authenticate. They acquire a bunch of certificates. And they get access to the document, if appropriate, after validating the user's identity. In addition to getting access to the document, they get a bunch of restrictions, which might say you can print this document, you can copy this document, or you can save this document, or you can't do any of those things. There are many restrictions that can be enforced. But basically, the experience of the user is completely natural. You don't have to decrypt the document. You don't have to perform any additional tasks. As a user that receives a protected document, you just open the document and it tells you, yeah, you cannot print this, or the print button is disabled. But other than that, there was no change in the regular user experience for opening the document. So as I mentioned before, we have AD-RMS. We had that for over 10 years now. And we have Azure RMS, which is relatively new, only 2 years old. Originally, this is how the two look like, very different, with different capabilities. For example, Azure RMS could deal with mobile devices. AD-RMS could deal with on-premises servers. Last year, we started filling these gaps. We implemented the RMS connector. The RMS connector enables a company to integrate on-premises servers with Azure RMS. So you don't need to move your data, your services, such as SharePoint, Exchange, or the like, to the cloud in order to benefit from Azure RMS. You can start using Azure RMS, maybe starting using Exchange Online for some users, or maybe not. But at the same time, you still have on-premises servers. You integrate them with the cloud by using the RMS connector. The RMS connector is a very lightweight component. It's a three-click installation. And then you have to configure some things in the servers to tell them you are going to talk to the connector in order to do RMS. Very straightforward. We also implemented that key management service, which I'm going to describe in detail later. But it's basically the platform that enables you to encrypt the platform that enables you to manage your keys. We also implemented, just last month, the mobile endpoints for on-premises servers. So the applications that you have that are RMS-enabled on a mobile device, such as the RMS sharing app, which is one thing that we created, can now run on a mobile device and talk to AD-RMS, not only to Azure RMS. We are implementing this. This is not there yet. What we call Azure AD collaboration. As I mentioned, doing peer-to-peer collaboration by federating with different companies really doesn't scale. So what we built, what we are building, is basically the ability for your organization to trust Azure AD as a collaboration hub. Instead of saying, I collaborate with Contoso, Fabricam, and Tailspin Toys, you say, I collaborate securely with any company that is set up to federate with Azure AD. So then you talk to your partners and you tell them, hey, can you set up Azure AD federation? They do that, and now you can securely collaborate with them. Two clarifications. First, that doesn't mean that you trust these companies or anybody in these companies. It means that you can collaborate, not that you will collaborate. Then you have to define policies that say this document is accessible to people at Contoso, and then that will work. The other thing is that if you don't set up that collaboration, or if you don't tell them to federate with the cloud, you can still collaborate. If I send a document to Contoso and Contoso hasn't done anything about RMS, the recipient can still sign up for Azure RMS reactively when they receive the content. It's going to tell them, in order to consume this content, you need to sign up for the service. They do. They enter the username. They create a password. Now they can consume the content. The admins at Contoso don't yet know anything about it. The day they realize that they are using RMS, if they are interested in becoming part of the seamless experience by not requiring their users to sign up independently, they basically create a tenant, and they take over all those users, and now all their users seamlessly can work with you. It's kind of a viral process. One user starts using it, the IT manager one day says, oh, I like this, they sign up, and then all their users can do it. It's a very seamless, integral flow. How do you work in hybrid scenarios? I mentioned the RMS connector. Here's how it works. Microsoft Azure RMS works with Active Directory and Azure AD for working with identities. It works with mobile devices. It works with Office 365. And it can also integrate with other servers on-premises, such as Exchange, SharePoint, or FCI, but not directly. The challenge is that these servers were built to talk Kerberos, to authenticate against Active Directory. They don't know how to talk directly to the cloud, which doesn't talk Kerberos. So we have a mismatch between the protocols, especially for authentication. There are other details that make it, not seamless. So what you do is to deploy a connector. The connector is a service that you run on-premises in a server, a separate server. And it's very low footprint. You can run it on any lightweight server. You put it there. You authorize some servers to use the connector. For example, you may say, all my Exchange servers and these three SharePoint servers are able to talk through the connector with the cloud. And then you go to the servers and you enable IRM. You need to set up a couple of things. We provide a tool that configures the servers appropriately. And that will say, whenever you need to do RMS, don't go talk to the cloud. Don't go and talk to ADRMS. Go and talk to the connector. And the connector will take care of it. Once set up, it's extremely transparent. The servers just work with RMS. The keys, the licenses, policies, everything is still in the cloud. There is no duality in the information protection platform. You are still using 100% of the cloud. Your servers do that through kind of a proxy. They interface through the connector. That enables the full set of integration in Exchange, such as OWASP rendering, pre-licensing, journal decryption, transport encryption, all those things that allow you to create a seamless experience. Same thing works for SharePoint, and same thing for file classification infrastructure, which enables you to look at a folder and say, I'm going to protect any document in this folder that contains credit card numbers or things like that. Question back there? Question is, how do you make the RMS connector highly available? Obviously, it needs to be highly available because otherwise you may lose that integration. You make it highly available by just installing a couple of them and load balancing them. The connector is completely stateless. It doesn't even know how it's called. So you install one connector, you install another connector, you register a name in DNS, point it to those servers, and then that's one way to do it. Another one is to point the DNS to a load balancer. You one day decide to use HTTPS, change the name, change the SSL certificate. You can do that. It's completely stateless. It's a very low maintenance installation that you can manage as you please. ADRMS traditionally is very static. Once you define a URL, it's stuck there. Once you enable SSL, yeah, you have to stay with that. The connector is very flexible. You can change any configuration at any point in time, and it will just work. I mentioned key management. One of the biggest concerns by our customers typically is, how do I make sure that you're not snooping on me? We created this thing that's called Bring Your Own Key. Bring Your Own Key allows you to create a key on-premises in a hardware security module. Hardware security modules, for those not familiar with them, are basically a cryptographic engine wrapped in explosives. It's a tamper-proof device that manages your keys internally and that allows you to perform cryptographic operations without you ever seeing the keys. If the key is marked as non-exportable and non-recoverable, and it's basically marked in a special way, you cannot get the key back. You put it in, you never get it out. You can still work with the key through authorized calls to the device, but you cannot extract the keys. It is said that if you really don't trust that that is the case, that you think that there is somebody that can hack into these HSMs, you know the first trillionaire in the world, because that is the device that manages all financial transactions in the planet. If you can crack an HSM, you won't be even working for the NSA. You will be working for a hacker organization and getting rich. And the fact that the US finances are not stellar means that the US government cannot hack into these devices either, because otherwise they will have everybody's money. So the Thales HSMs, which is the version that we're using, the product that we are using, you buy one of these things, you create your keys. Today, actually, until a couple months ago, you come to Redmond with a card that contains an encryption version of your keys and a bunch of artifacts, and you import your keys or synchronize your keys with our HSMs without showing your keys to us, and you see how the keys are marked as non-exportable, non-recoverable, non-nothing in those devices that we have. And that way, you know that the keys are inside our HSMs. We never saw those keys. You leave without leaving us your cards, your passwords, or anything. And at that point on, we can work with those keys by performing cryptographic operations, but we cannot extract the keys. If somebody comes and says, hey, I need those keys, we can tell them, no, we cannot give them to you. If we come with a subpoena and they tell us, hey, you have to comply, this is the law, you have to give us the keys, sorry, we cannot give them to you because we don't have those keys. We have this device, good luck with it, here it is, but they cannot do anything with it. We cannot extract the keys, we cannot export them, we cannot share them, we cannot be negligent, we cannot share them across organizations. Even the fact that we cannot export them blocks us from providing certain services when you're using the HSM. For example, today, Exchange Online cannot work with those keys because it hasn't been updated to work with the HSMs, and we cannot give them the keys, but that's something that we will solve eventually. Last month, we implemented what we call the no-flight bring your own key. You can do that key dance, key synchronization from your own home, from your own offices. You don't need to come to Redmond or to go to Redmond to synchronize your keys. You can do it remotely over the wire. Coming in person is still an option if you are paranoid and you don't trust these protocols. Yeah, they have been validated. They have been checked by a specialist, and there is lots of auditing going on. But if you say, I'd rather see it in person, that you're doing what you're saying you're doing, you can still fly to Redmond and do that. But the remote bring your own key is technically equivalent to what you do in person. So we're kind of running out of time, blame me. There are many ways to work with RMS from the end user point of view. One of them is using native integration to applications. For example, you have Office and you want to protect a document, you go to information, protect, you choose a policy, that's it. The problem with that is that it is designed for working within your organization. You create a document, you encrypt it, and then you put it in a share, somebody else can open it, and within your organization it should work because all your users are RMS enabled and have the right devices and are prepared to work with RMS. But if you give that document to somebody that doesn't have a clue about what RMS is, the device may be missing the right applications. The user may not have an account to consume this content. The user may not know how to deal with RMS. So we created the RMS sharing app. The RMS sharing app allows you to take a document, protect it in place, that's one option. Same thing as with Office, it just gets protected. But you can also say share protected. When you say share protected, you see what you're seeing here on screen. You enter the email address of the user you want to share it with, or users. You grant them certain rights, such as you have viewer rights, you have reviewer rights, you have co-author rights. You basically establish the level of access that you want to give them. You establish other restrictions, like offline access or expiration for the content. You say, 1 year from now, this content will expire, or 1 week from now. When you click send, it will create an email, an unencrypted email, that has a series of links and an attachment. Those links enable the user to consume the document. The attachment is the encrypted document. So the user looks at that and says, in order to use this content, you need to sign up here. You need an app to consume it that you can get here, and you can get more information here. The recipient, once it follows those steps, sees the native experience of getting the document consumed on screen with a policy that tells them what they can do and what they can't, and restrictions to the usage that, like, you don't have a print button here. As I mentioned, you have also integration into native applications such as Office or soon to come Adobe PDF. You can, in Office, for example, protect in place by choosing an option in the toolbar and say, protect this document here, and you apply a policy based on a series of templates that your company defined for you. You can also do the same in mobile devices. Today, you cannot protect anything other than pictures in a mobile device. I can't take a picture and say, protect, and share protected with somebody, and I get an encrypted picture. But we will be enable protection of Office documents and the like in these mobile devices. But you can consume any kind of document in mobile devices as long as this device has an application that supports that kind of protected document. So we have two levels of protection, native protection and generic protection. With native protection, you get the full experience with RMS. Native protection is designed for those that can need to share content with people that they know will be reading this in a device, such as a PC, that has full RMS integration. But sometimes you need to share something with somebody that you know that they are going to read it on an iPad, or you don't know what they're going to use to consume this document. And today, in an iPad or an Android device, there is no rich Office client that can use RMS natively. That's coming, but it's not there yet. So while that's coming, you may want to choose generic protection. When you do generic protection, you get the same access controls that you have with native protection. You still require authentication to consume the content. The data is encrypted and protected in transit. It is encrypted and protected at rest in the device or in your device. The difference is that when you open the document, if it was protected natively, you get usage restrictions like you cannot export this data, you cannot copy this data, you cannot print this data. In the generic protection case, you don't get those restrictions. So you're trusting the user that the user will honor the policy. It is a high degree of trust in the user, but we think that that is even so much better than the alternatives such as PGP or other encryption mechanisms, because they offer the same strength, the same protection against unauthorized users, but at the same time, they offer a much better experience because there is no key sharing, no preparation of the device, seamless authentication, group-based management, you have expiration, you will soon have content tracking and revocation and other things. So it's significantly degraded from the experience that you get in RMS in the sense that you get a little bit less control, but it's significantly better than any other information protection technology that is just based on encrypting the content, such as PGP, which is the most commonly used one. When you receive a document that was generically protected, let's say that you're doing so in a mobile device, you get this email that says, in order to consume this document, you need to do this, this, and that. You go through that experience, you enter your credentials, and then you open the document in the native application. You see this is being opened in a regular application. There is no policy enforcement. If you wanted to copy these, print these, save these, you could. Before that happened, you told the user, hey, don't print this, copy, or do anything like that via a policy screen, so they know what they need to do, but you are expecting them to honor those restrictions. If you did native protection, you get the same email, but when you're going to open this document, you enter your credentials, and you get to read it in an RMS-enabled application. For example, in this case, it's Foxit for iOS and other applications in the other mobile devices that offers usage restrictions, such as you cannot copy this, you cannot print this, you cannot save it, because that's what the author said. So the experience is very similar, but the restrictions are there only if you didn't use generic protection. This also works with pictures and text files, but the good thing is that with pictures and text files, even if you don't have a picture viewer in your device that can use RMS, you have enforcement because the RMS sharing app in these mobile devices can render pictures and text files natively. So if I share a drawing or a snapshot of a whiteboard or something like that with you, you will get policy enforcement. You cannot forward it, you cannot copy it, you cannot print it, you cannot save it unprotected. The experience allows your company to personalize that login screen, keep it on premises, do federated-based authentication so you can tell people information about what they are expected to do there, and you can create a more seamless experience. What happens is the user, the receiving user, doesn't have RMS, never used RMS. They receive this email, and they click on the sign-up link. They are asked to enter an email address, and then they receive another email that tells them to validate your identity, click here. They do that. They create name, username, password. They repeat the password, and they click create. They download the app for their device, a PC, mobile device, or whatever. They can download also applications for their device, such as Foxit PDF, or a plugin for Adobe that's coming, I think, next month or so, that enables you to do PDF consumption, protected PDF consumption in Adobe Reader. And then you go back to your original email and open the attachment. And the experience from there is the same that you already saw. So we're not blocking anybody. We call this is not never dead-ending the user. If I send you a protected document, you can consume it. There are technical steps to go through that vary depending on if you're using RMS already or if you're not. But if you click on the links, in the end you will be able to get it. So there is no preparation. You don't need to announce to people, I'm going to send you a protected message, so you need to go to this website and sign up. It's all very seamless experience. We are already over time, but I think given that I was late, I'm getting a little bit of slack here. Question there? Well, I call, the question is if the templates is a policy. I call them policies to use generic terminology, but they are still called templates. The question is when you use the connector and other applications, if they see the same policies, the same templates, regardless of where they were created. So when you create a template, either in the cloud or on-premises, a template defines a set of rights for different users. That template allows users to protect stuff based on a certain policy. You create them in the service or server. They are available to both servers, such as Exchange or SharePoint, or end users. They are the same policies. We're adding one feature in a couple of weeks that allows you to define different policies to be used by different users. For example, you may have the marketing department is going to have their bunch of templates, and the engineering department is going to have a different bunch of templates. But in essence, all these templates are stored in the cloud, and they are all available to all users unless you say that some templates are available to specific users. So how to get these? When you get Office 365, you can just enable RMS by clicking one button. You just go to the portal and you say activate, and that's it. You don't need to deploy anything to make RMS work. From there, you can click on the button at the bottom that says additional configuration, and you go to a new portal. That's in beta now. The experience requires you to enter a credit card and a few other things. That's going away in a couple of weeks. But right now, you have to enter the credit card and that thing to get to the portal. We're not going to charge you, but you still have to enter your credit card. And then you can create custom templates, custom policies, and make them available to all your users. And we have basically the same capabilities in the cloud today that we have in the on-premises world. You can create a template, you can grant rights to different users, you can define an expiration policy, you can define offline access policies and things like that. I just said that. You can have as many templates as you want, but we recommend not to overdoing it because users really get confused when they see more than 5-6 policies and they have to choose from. Until you have scope templates, which is the thing about defining different policies for different users, try to keep it low to a small number of templates. Never show the same user more than 5 or 6 templates because it's really confusing for them. In Office 365, you can automate protection. Actually, in Exchange, you can do as well by defining transport protection. Office 365 has a DLP engine that allows you to detect data and, as one possible action, applies rights protection. We think that that is a great tool because it allows you to apply a policy that restricts users for data without blocking access to the data. In DLP, you normally block access. You say, oh, this data is confidential, so I'm going to block it right there because nobody shall see it. That creates lots of false positives and annoys people when they cannot do what they are supposed to be doing. With the DLP integration with RMS, what you can do is to scan data. When you see something that looks suspicious, you protect it with RMS. You're allowing people to consume with this data, but you can't allow them to do it securely because they cannot pass it over to other people. So the legitimate users get the data, and they get some restrictions that prevent them from doing stupid things like leaving them unencrypted in a pen drive or something like that. Oh, well, I think we're out of time, actually. So I'm going to leave some time for questions. I wanted to go a little bit more into how this integrates with other features in Exchange and SharePoint, but let's leave it there and apologize for the lost time when I got here. Question here. So the question is about archival and policy management systems and other e-discovery systems that are not Microsoft's. We are working, and we worked in the past with many of these solutions. For example, Symantec Vault can work with RMS natively, and a few others, I think OpenText or a couple others, do that integration today. We created an API that is very easy to use that allows organizations to do integration with RMS in just one API call. It's extremely straightforward. And we are working with others. If your customer is using some archival solution that doesn't have RMS integration, we encourage them to talk to this company and to give them an email. Whatever is necessary, we'll work with them to get them RMS enabled. Basically, what we lack today is interest by these companies in doing RMS integration because they don't see the demand from their customers. But if the customers tell them to do it, they will. We're sure they do it. It's just adding a couple lines of text of code to their application. Yes?
When I started using RMS for a year or so, and then we just stopped using it because it's not working.
It didn't do what you wanted.
Yeah. How can I access those files? I mean, I do not pay my
You are trying to use the online service or the on-premises?
Yeah, the online service.
What you can do is to import your keys into an on-premises server and keep that server running on premises and redirect the URLs. You have to create a support ticket to obtain that that key from us. You need to go through a process. We validate your identity and everything, and then we hand over your keys. If you're using bring your own key, we cannot do that. You had your copy of the key. You keep using it. Now, I would really like to know why it didn't work for you. We can do that offline. But we understand there are scenarios that where it doesn't do what you want, but most of them, actually, we are very confident that we will have them nailed down by the end of the year. So if it doesn't do what you need, we really want to make sure that we're covering those problems.
But then I can decrypt all files?
You can decrypt all files. The problem is that you have to locate all files. So that's the challenge. Doing RMS or any kind of information protection technology is a high commitment thing. You need to make sure that if you're encrypting your files with RMS or with anything else, you need to make sure that you're going to be using it before you deploy it widely, because if you don't like it, you better know before you have a million files encrypted. Another question here. I'm sorry? There are?
Mm-hmm. Right. There's a user license.
Yes.
That private key for that user license, where is
it? Where is the private key for the user? The use license, it's a chain of certificates. It's a chain of certificates. The user has a certificate that is protected inside the computer. In the end, it's protected with an API that's called DP API that uses the user's password to protect that. So nobody other than the user can decrypt that, not even an administrator. If you reset the user's password, you lose that certificate. It's all protected inside the device.
What about in the iOS
and Android? In mobile devices, there is no certificate for the user. It's a REST call that says, give me a license, and you get the license. It's all protected by the communication channel, and there is no persistence of the key. Once I consume the content, I close the document, it goes away, and I need to do it again. Yes, the server root key. But that protects the policy in the document, not the license that was given to the user. The license that was given to the user is only accessible to the user. Let's take that offline in a few minutes and I'll explain to you in detail. Yes? Yes. A key management service is going to become a standalone service in the cloud, and we are in that process right now. So it's actually being used now right now by Office Message Encryption, and it's going to be used by Azure Virtual Machines and a few other things. It's all work in progress, but what we did basically is extract this service and make it a standalone service that's usable by others. So do we. We... Okay. If it, just 1 second. I'm going to continue answering questions, but here I have a favor that a technology student asked me. They are doing a research project on information protection. They, if you could answer this poll, it will be very beneficial. It's completely Microsoft independent. It has nothing to do with us. But they asked me if I could share this and if we could get some responses. It's a research project about how information protection is used at organizations. And we really like to see this done because it could give us more information to improve our products. So continue with your question, please. Okay. These companies are companies that are working with RMS today or are going to be releasing products in the next few days. In particular, Adobe is going to come very soon. They integrate their solutions with RMS to some extent. For example, OpenText, when you save a document in an OpenText library, it decrypts it on save, so it can index it and search for it and do things like that. Foxit has full integration, as well as Nitro PDF. They have full integration to their... Box is still in beta, but yes, they will automatically protect documents. Well, they will. They should, because they invest a lot in this. They've been working for quite a few months with us. Did I give you one of these? In RMS enabling their offering. We're also working with Dropbox and a few others. I don't know if Dropbox is there. These are the ones that are either already in the market with their products or that are very advanced in their solutions, such as CyberCloud and Box and Adobe. They don't have an in-market product that integrates with RMS today, but they are advanced enough that we are confident that they will release this relatively soon. In the case of Box, it's basically making it transparent protection inside Box, so when you save files there, they get automatically protected and they can't be accessed on any mobile device.